Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 260, which exists in a temporal plane that in which time neither, you know, passes or it speeds up, it slows down, it's always in motion or something. And my name is John, and joining me this morning is Ryan. What's up, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, am I even really here? Who is to say? We will finish this episode and it will feel like an hour or whatever, and people will be like, you're done recording? You just went in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and also you're wearing like a sweet and Justice for All t-shirt with no sleeves on it, and it's like it could be 2024, it could be like 1988, like nobody knows.
It's true. It's true. Yep.
Yeah, so we this morning we are here to revisit the Mortis arc from Star Wars: The Clone Wars. We have, I feel like, talked a little bit of shit here and there about this this arc in the past, just like, I don't know, we've been doing this podcast for a long time, and I feel like whenever it has come up, we have been less than generous in our discussion of it. So I thought, Ryan, especially with its, you know, seemingly increased importance to the larger Star Wars story, that we should go back and watch it and take another look at it years later and see what we thought, and just talk a little bit about this trilogy of episodes from Star Wars: The Clone Wars. So we've both done that now, and we're going to talk about it. And what I love about this, Ryan, is that we have not at all discussed how either of us feel about these episodes on rewatch. So, you know, we're just going to see what do we think here as we jump into them. So we watched all three. We took notes on all three. We're going to kind of talk about all of them, you know, or we're going to talk about each of them individually, I should say. But maybe we should start out by, you know, at least addressing a little bit the big question here. How did we feel about these three episodes of Star Wars: The Clone Wars years later? Would you like to start, Ryan?
Sure. I feel about the same as I did before. I don't know. I feel like I understand the episodes better, and then, like, you know, I looked at, like, oh, how does this show up in Rebels? Like, and then obviously I think we'll probably talk at the end about how it shows up in Ahsoka. But as we're kind of going through the episodes, I think I'll be able to talk about some of my pretty major issues I have with all this. I did think, like, the episodes are, like, pretty watchable. They're not, like, painful or, like, badly done or anything. I think just, like, the plot and, you know, repercussions in general just still just don't sit well with me. So that's kind of where I'm
at. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I probably overall agree with that for the most part. I mean, like you said, the episodes are watchable and, like, well done. I agree. I think they are well produced, and they're good episodes. I think at the time that I first watched them, which, by the way, would have been 2011, is when these episodes first aired. So we're coming up on 15 years almost since these episodes first aired. When I first watched them, I think they really threw me for a loop, right? Like, I was like, what is this? This is not, like, this does not feel like Star Wars to me. This is wild. You know, in 2024, I'm a little more used to this type of Star Wars, you know? So I think I probably am less put off by them than I was initially. You know what I mean? So I'm able, and that was part of why I wanted to rewatch them, is I thought, you know, it's been so long and we've been through a lot, like, since then, in terms of there's been a lot of Star Wars, you know, content out there. So I don't know, I shouldn't say we've been through a lot. I've enjoyed a lot. Like, there's been a lot of great stuff, you know, but some of it has stretched and challenged and kind of expanded, you know, how I personally view Star Wars. And so As a result, I think I'm a little more open to these episodes than I had been. But all that being said, they're still not my favorites. So like, I still have issues with them, and I still have, like you said, issues maybe with their larger implications for the storytelling in general.
So something I was wondering, I think like you make a really good point. Like we're now in this era of arguably competing visions of what Star Wars is. And I think that's true in like, you know, the creators, but also like what fans gravitate to or have strong feelings about one way or another. Like, you know, you've got on one hand, you've got like Ahsoka, which, you know, is very much tied into this, all of this. And then on the other hand, you have like Andor. And I think we're just in this era. I mean, Star Wars has always had many creators, but that was mostly in like the George era. That was mostly like EU stuff, which was like, you know, it counts as much as you want it to count. George doesn't actually think it counts unless there's something he wants to take from it. But now, like, we're in this era where, like, yes, this is, everything is equal, everything's the same, everything's canon, whatever, like, you know, Tales of the Jedi is, you know, the same as in importance as Andor, and, you know, these are both Star Wars, and I think, like, you know, we, and people are like, yeah, actually, maybe not. Like, maybe this thing is more Star Wars, this thing is less Star Wars, whatever. So all that being said, like, this is just interesting because it is, we are kind of back to the era of, like, you know, Clone Wars was very much George's thing, and also, you know, Dave Filoni's thing. And I wasn't really able to find much about this, but do you know, was the Mortis thing a George idea?
Yeah, see, I was trying to find that too, and, okay. You know, yeah, I didn't find a lot. I wish that I could have, I didn't have time to like dig into like some really old Star Wars insiders or try to see if there was something, you know, in places like that. I tried to find them online, but I didn't find anything. But I feel like maybe, you know, but I did see, I found a featurette that's on the Clone Wars Blu-ray that, you know, addresses this stuff a little bit. It's only like 2 minutes long, and it's just Dave Filoni talking.
You will notice on this box that there is no lengthy documentary on the Mortis trilogy. Christian Taylor, who wrote the trilogy, and myself, we both firmly believe that we should really not answer directly a lot of the questions about Mortis. Was that really Qui-Gon Jinn that appeared to Obi-Wan in the cave or not? What does it mean that Ahsoka talks to her older self? Will she ever reach that age? Who was the father? What does it mean now that Anakin's the chosen one and that he has a better understanding of that? Ahsoka apparently died and she came back to life. Does that have any meaning? We have answers to those questions, for sure. But if I answer directly what something is, I feel that I'll be robbing you of the purpose of that arc, which is to make you wonder. It's to make you challenge certain ideas, to ask questions. There are many mysteries in Star Wars. There are many mysteries on the planet Mortis. I think George really started to delve back into the mythology that he created about the Force itself. And we started to see some of those elements be personified in the father, the son, and the daughter. George is highly involved in all aspects of this series, but when we deal directly with the Force, Christian Taylor and I feel very strongly that, you know, that word has to come directly from George. A lot of the notes from Mortis come from a really old binder that George has that has his original writings on what the Force is and what makes it up.
The core of the Force. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got the dark side, the light side. One is selfless, one is selfish. And you want to keep them in balance.
Slowly, over time, things will start to become more clear about Mortis. We aren't done exploring the nature of the Force and the kind of bigger mythical questions that we began to ask in the Mortis trilogy. Always in Motion is the future, and the Clone Wars future is in motion right now, working on future episodes that will continue this rather intriguing arc that George has brought to light after many years.
I think it does come from George, or that George is pretty involved in it. One thing he said is that Christian Taylor wrote this trilogy of episodes, by the way. He was the writer. And Dave Filoni was the supervising director, and there was Stuart Lee and Brian Kalin O'Connell were the directors of the episodes, which, you know, we could talk about when we get into them. But anyway, Dave says something along the lines of, Christian Taylor and I believe any word dealing directly with the Force has to come directly from George. And then Dave also talked about a lot of the ideas related to these episodes coming from like this old binder of ideas that George had about the Force. So those two things combined, you know, as well as the fact that, yes, George was still at Lucasfilm, heavily involved with the Clone Wars throughout his production. I think he was all the way through, but this is only season three, so this is, you know, right in the middle of the run. Yeah, I couldn't find anything super concrete that said George Lucas was like, you know, sat us down and was like, Mortis, 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 here's the deal, the father, the son, the daughter, all that. But certainly he more than signed off on it. I mean, he was very involved, and in that featurette, Dave really makes it sound like, especially when it's stuff related to this like high concept Force type stuff, like we are, that's all coming from George, or we are like super running it by George or whatever, you know what I mean? So that's the best I've found so far in terms of George's direct involvement, but it certainly sounds like, you know, he was on board at the minimum, but that they maybe were pulling straight from, you know, some G-level canon binders and conversations, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. One more thing I'll bring up from that featurette, and I'll probably drop the audio into the episode too, but one more thing I'll bring up from that is that Dave talks about the ambiguous nature of these episodes in that featurette as well, and says that the purpose of this arc is to challenge expectations, ask questions, and that if he were to answer questions, answer the questions that people have about this arc. I'm looking at your face, Ryan, right now as I'm saying this.
Yeah.
If he were to answer, if he were to answer questions about this arc, he would be robbing the audience of the purpose of this arc, this Mortis arc. So it's about asking the questions and about challenging expectations and that kind of thing. So obviously it's intentionally ambiguous. But he also does point out that they will continue to explore Mortis in future. He says like in more Clone Wars episodes, but obviously we've seen now that really it's like in Rebels and in Ahsoka and, you know, like, I feel like it's obviously like very directly connected to like the World Between Worlds and all that. So it like, it's sort of like this, this very fantasy feeling, you know, version of Star Wars that has been, you know, this, it's like a thread that's continued through, you know, future animated shows and then even into the live action shows and kind of in The Rise of Skywalker too. So it's all over the place.
Yeah, I think I take some issue with calling this ambiguous because...
Okay, well, that's my word. I will say that was my word. He didn't say that.
Okay, but. Okay. Because to me, this feel like these... I think one of my major issues with these is they feel overly literal, like extremely literal. And with everything from like the, you know, the Force personification of the families to, you know, the whole Anakin chosen one thing. Like, I think you're taking ambiguous concepts and, like, being very literal with them. And I think
that's yes.
only continued in, like, the subsequent media that they've shown up in.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I think he was talking about, like, is that really Qui-Gon Jinn or is that not really Qui-Gon Jinn? Like, stuff like that, which I do think yeah. stays pretty ambiguous, but... But no, I agree with you that there were moments where I was like, wow, we're going to be that on the nose about it, or we're really just going to yeah. say, like, flat out, like, this is the answer. And sometimes I didn't really like the answer that much. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I get what you mean.
All right. Should we just dive into the episodes now?
I think we should. I think we should talk about yeah. the first of the three, which is episode 15 from season 3. It is titled Overlords. But our buddy Dave in Japan hooked us up with the Japanese titles, which he, you know, he kind of said set up the episodes a little better, and I agree. So the Japanese title of this first episode is Force Planet, which is a solid title as well, maybe a little better, at least a little more straightforward than Overlords as a title there. And it, like I said before, it was directed by Stuart Lee, and all three of these episodes were written by Christian Taylor. So, yeah, let's jump in. Actually, Ryan, if you don't mind, I have the synopsises. What's the plural of synopsis? Synopses? Pulled up. Synopsi, yeah. I have the official descriptions pulled up, so I'm just going to read those real quick so then we don't have to, like, worry about trying to explain what happens in the episode, and we can just, sure. you know, talk the important points. A mysterious force draws Anakin. This is Overlords, which is the episode we're talking about, right? A mysterious force draws Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka to a distant planet and its inhabitants, a family of exceptionally powerful force wielders, in an attempt to determine whether Anakin is truly the chosen one. The patriarch of this family, known only as the Father, has spent ages maintaining the balance between his daughter, who is strong with the light side of the force, and his son, who aligns with the dark. The Father reveals his days are numbered, and he seeks Anakin to take his place as the fulcrum of the balance. Mm-hmm. A test proves that Anakin is capable of controlling both offspring, as the Father does, but Skywalker refuses to take the Father's place. Okay, so there's our description of the episode. Yeah, like it states in that description, it opens up with them getting pulled into... Mortis, I guess. It looks like a floating Hellraiser cube, I thought. What do you call that cube from Hellraiser? The puzzle box or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It kind of looked like that. So that was odd. It's like this big structure, like, floating out there in space. It's not like a planet that they are popping into there. But anyway, they get pulled into that, and they're sort of, like, passed out when they wake up. Mm-hmm. And they first run into the daughter, who tells them, "We are the ones that guard the power," which I assume means the force, right? The beginning, the middle, and the end. So they're already, like, in this first episode, and actually it's mostly in the first episode, I think they talk about time as, like, a concept. The Father says it was necessary to withdraw from the temporal world. So I guess, like, I don't know, time, there's no time on Mortis, or it certainly doesn't operate the same way there as it does elsewhere. So,
yeah, because... they are, like, ancient beings, which I think is an important thing to note.
Yeah, ancient beings, but the father's getting too old and is going to die, though, also, right?
Yes, it's... Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. So, but the time thing is interesting, because it's like they'll wake up, like, in fact, I think the suggestion at the end of the arc, the end of the three episodes, it's like... they wake up from all this and barely any time has passed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they were just on their ship the whole time, sort of. Mm-hmm. It's a mystical thing, but time doesn't exist, or at least it doesn't operate the same way there on Mortis, which I think would be true of the world between worlds too, really, kind of, right? So it's another link to that.
Yeah, because I think that's... I haven't rewatched Rebels since it was on, so I don't exactly remember how it's handled there. But in Ahsoka, it's like all the stuff that she does in the world between worlds is like an instant in the regular time.
Yeah. Right, and you can just walk from one light bridge to another and go to like any time, right? Like, you know, take a left and it's, you know, Return of the Jedi, take a right and it's The Last Jedi, right? I mean, isn't that kind of like,
it's like a, how it's it operates like a Lego up there? Star Wars game.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, the temporal thing, the time thing is a new idea here. I don't remember any other Star Wars stories before this Mortis arc suggesting there was a realm within Star Wars of the Force where, you know, time didn't exist or didn't exist the way we understand it.
I mean, I think like the closest thing I think in Star Wars to all of the stuff, which I imagine is probably the root, no pun intended, is the tree on Dagobah.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the only thing I can think of that predates this that would have some like weird, you know, unreality, maybe some time stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's certainly very mystical. I think, you know, that's a little, that is more, well, I don't know. I think I always thought of that as just like a place that's like strong in the Force and delivers visions or whatever, you know, so you're mm-hmm. seeing visions there, but I guess you could argue to a certain extent it's almost like a possible vision of the future, so to speak. So, yeah, mm-hmm. It's just a little less heady, right? Like a little less high concept, I guess, that Dagobah tree. But yeah, I mean, that's only the second Star Wars movie. It's 1980, and George is already, you know, dipping his toes into the mystical side of things in a more kind of, I don't know if concrete is the right word, but in a more realized way. So he's been into it all along.
Yeah, and that is like a scene I would call like ambiguous with like the dialogue around it, like everything, like they just kind of like they leave it there and like no one is explaining it, and then, you know, Yoda doesn't break down the time and the meaning and everything there.
Yeah. Well, jump in any ideas you want to throw out here, Ryan, as we're breaking down the episode. The next thing I have is that the brother looks a hell of a lot like the Grand Inquisitor. He looks like a Powan, mm-hmm. which is what the Grand Inquisitor is, and I feel like even the marks above his eyes and stuff, like all that, like seems. So I don't know if he's supposed to be a Powan, you know, from Utapau or what, but he looks so much like the Grand Inquisitor, who, of course, had not been created yet. So it makes you wonder if, and maybe Dave has talked about this, I don't know, but if the Grand Inquisitor was created in the image of the brother.
Oh, boy. The whole family seems to be, like, different races.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I don't know.
Well, it wouldn't be.
I wonder, like, I don't actually wonder. I do not need this explained to me. Like, please don't. If you're listening, Lucasfilm, you don't need to tell me who the mother is.
Yeah.
Like, I do not. We do not need that. But it is, like, it is curious. Like, because I
bet it's Rey. Do you think it's Rey? Oh, I bet God. It's Rey.
It's Palpatine. But, like, so, like, where this stuff, like, everything in here just works so much better for me, like, as a metaphor. And then, like, all of these, like, little nitpicks and stuff, like, don't actually matter. And
yeah.
But that's the problem with this episode. I think it's the nature of the medium that they were using here, where this is like a television show for like 8-year-olds, and that they're trying to do this like heady three part arc, which, you know, typically doesn't exist in much children's television. Like, obviously there's things that came before that did multi-part arcs, like X-Men animated series, Batman animated series and stuff, but you know, it feels like the ideas here are like constantly like butting heads with the medium, because I think this story could have probably been told in a more satisfying way in, like, you know, an adult novel, or, you know, in modern times, like, it could still be an animated series on Disney Plus, but, like, the audience is different than it was in 2011 when this was on Fox Kids or whatever, whatever Clone Wars aired on. I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah, it was not Fox Kids. I know. Yeah. Oh my God. Cartoon Network. Wasn't it Cartoon Network?
Cartoon Network. Okay.
I think it was Cartoon Network. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. But although I think that this, it's like what you're describing is, a problem to the least degree in this episode, I think, of the three. To me, it's like this one is the least defined, because like if I just watched this episode on its own, I feel like at the end of it I could be like, well, I don't know, was that real or not, you know? And when like Obi-Wan sees Qui-Gon, Anakin sees Shmi, Ahsoka sees her older self, and like when Obi-Wan was talking to Qui-Gon, I was like, oh yeah, that's not Qui-Gon. And then Shmi even gets all like, doesn't Shmi turn into the sun at the end of the vision that Anakin has of her or something? Like, so it's like, to me it's like, oh yeah, okay, so yeah. This is like not real. You know what I mean? This is like, these are visions, like this place where they are. It's like, I don't know, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's mystical, but it's like a weird dream state that they're in. They're all on that ship knocked out, and it's like a weird dream state or something, and that's it. But obviously, like, by the time you get to the end of the three episodes, and then of course, by the time you get to 15 more years of Star Wars storytelling, it's like, no, we're really tripling down on this being a thing that they, I feel like anyways, a thing that they actually experienced, and a place that actually has a lot of importance and power in Star Wars. So, you know, in 2011, I think you could have walked away from this episode for sure, and even the arc overall, and been like, I don't know, maybe it didn't even happen, you know, but that feels harder to do as time goes on.
Yeah. And now actually, like, I feel like I need to be clear here. I don't mean that this whole thing, I feel like they were trying to do a lot in the restraints of the medium. I think actually, like what you described, I think you can actually have an episode of like a kids TV show watched by kids and have it be kind of ambiguous. Like, honestly, like most of the over-explaining that happens in Star Wars is to appease like 45-year-old men. Like, who,
yeah,
you know, argue in YouTube comment sections about, like, a bunch of, like, literal crap that doesn't matter. So, yeah, I think I wish they would have actually leaned more into the ambiguous part of it.
Right.
Because then I think it would be, like, kind of like a non-issue, really.
Yeah. But do you agree with me, though, that, like, as time goes on, I don't know if retroactively is the right word, but, like, as more stories are told, they impact, like, how we view this story and whether or not we can sort of view it ambiguously. Like, I think the more times Dave Filoni sticks The World Between Worlds and Mortis God statues and stuff into future storytelling, the less I can be like, oh, well, this is, like, a weird fever dream arc of Clone Wars, and so it's whatever, like... No, now this shit is like all over the place, and so I can't really be like, who knows, you know, maybe it didn't really even, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think like this could have been like, you know, Sunny Day in the Void, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And like no one's like arguing or debating about, like, the canon and, like, repercussions of, like, that episode. Or I mean, actually, people probably are. It's probably a very heated discussion happening somewhere for the last, like, 15 years. But but you're right. Like, the way it keeps coming back. And I think that's what's hard sometimes about modern Star Wars storytelling is, again, it does feel like competing visions. And, you know, there's the story group to help tie everything together. But if you just followed Star Wars through, like, a Dave Filoni lens, like, this, and only, like, followed the stuff that he made, like, this would seem incredibly important. It's like, this is possibly the origin of the Force. This is, you know, this is everything. And it's obviously important because we keep coming back to it every 5 to 10 years. Like, we're still talking about this because it's super important. And then in the meantime, like, no one else who's making Star Wars stuff is, like, referencing any of this or, like, acknowledging any of this. Like, Tony Gilroy does not give a shit about the world between worlds. Like it's not coming up in any other place, but it's, like, this thing that has, like, all this weight in the context of, like, these stories. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Even somebody like Rian Johnson, who I think, like, has a ton of respect for Dave Filoni and really appreciates, like, the stuff he does and everything. Like, you know, I don't think he was thinking about this at all when he was making, you know, The Last Jedi, which is not even, like, there's no value judgment in that at all. Like, oh, he's, you know, he didn't care about it, so he wasn't. And it's just, like, they're just operating in different worlds, right? Like, it's just a totally different thing. It's like Hayden Christensen, you know, when he came back to be in Ahsoka, was like, oh, I had never watched the Clone Wars, so I went back and watched all the Clone Wars, and he really appreciated, like, Anakin's arc and his portrayal and all that in the Clone Wars. But, you know, yeah, not everyone is, like, consuming all this Star Wars stuff, and there's maybe not so much a hierarchy of importance or, like, canon anymore, where it's like, oh, the movies are canon and the other stuff is, like, less canon. I mean, when, you know, TV shows and movies and all that stuff, it's like, it all has its place and it's all canon and it's all important or whatever. But there's still millions and millions of people that will just watch Star Wars movies and they'll just know Star Wars as a series of movies. And then that's, like, what it'll be. And this stuff doesn't exist for them, you know? But then there's going to be a lot of people now who watch the Disney Plus TV shows and this stuff is getting pulled into that, but they'll still never go back and watch this. So it doesn't exist to them either. So it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just interesting to think about how Star Wars is so big and so expansive now that, there are storytellers, as you said, that are telling Star Wars stories that really don't in a major way take into consideration entire other types of Star Wars stories that to a lot of us as an audience are critical, you know, parts of that tapestry of that big story. But, you know, you're still going to hire, you're going to have people come in that are making a Star Wars movie that have never watched this arc and don't really know what it means. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that will continue to happen in the future. So it's like it's an interesting thing to wrestle with as an audience member and a fan, who's trying to process all this stuff, because it's like, it's not just one guy anymore, like you said, you know what I mean? So, and that doesn't make, I'm not saying that that makes this, like, less important or, you know, whatever. It's just reality, and it's just an interesting thing and a complex thing to kind of tackle or try to deal with, you know?
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, like, the, from my understanding, like, the story group is not there to guide Star Wars stories through the years, and, you know, they don't have, like, a grand vision for where Star Wars is going. It's individual creators who are, like, pitching, you know, their stories, or, you know, maybe maybe Lucasfilm is reaching out to people and being like, hey, we were thinking about a story around this, like, do you have an idea kind of thing, like, we think you'd be good for this, etc. But I think, like, really they are just there to make sure that the stories don't, like, overtly contradict each other, which I think, you know, in this, what, like, I guess, like, 10 years that we've, you know, been in this Disney era, I think they've done a pretty good job of that. Like, I can't think of too many, like, super egregious contradictions, especially compared to, you know, growing up in, like, the 90s and with, like, EU stuff and, you know, even, like, early 2000s and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just one more, one more point on that whole topic of different, like, creators, you know, and what they've seen and haven't seen and all that. I came across a comment from Dave Filoni a couple days or weeks ago, I can't remember, about Rise of Skywalker and Ahsoka being in it, you know, because, like, Ahsoka, like, it would imply she's dead, right? And we don't know the end of Ahsoka's story or whatever. And the comment from Dave was something like, well, yeah, like, he didn't ask me if she should be a voice, like, nobody asked or anything, right? It's just like, they just... she's just in it, which I think was, I think, in, you know, the intention there is, like, we want to really bring in characters from all different parts of the story. You know what I mean? I don't think it was in any way like a, oh, we don't give a shit what Dave thinks, we're just going to stick her in there anyway. You know, I think it was more like, there is this cast of voice actors and this cast of characters that's been a big part of Star Wars. And, like, it'll be cool for fans to bring in all these different, you know, kind of characters and voices and stuff. But it just is another example of, well, I don't know. I guess it isn't, because it's like, we're not even talking to Dave about whether she should be a voice at the end of the story or not. But also, I know who she is. I know who she is, at least, you know, so if you're JJ, so I don't know.
That is wild. Like, you think that, like, there could have at least been, like, an email, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, and I bet he talked to Pablo about it, though, or something. You know what I mean? I bet he talked to somebody, or, like, somebody was involved in, you know, and I think I would assume the idea is, like, it doesn't, because we have this whole world between worlds, like, what does it really mean that we hear Ahsoka's voice? Like, you know, is she even constrained by time anymore at this point? You know, I mean, we don't know where she's going to end up, but it sure seems like it'll be something to do with Mortis and the world between worlds, right?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I guess, like, but, before, like, it, that wasn't really an issue until we have this, like, Ahsoka show
that
is starting to bump up against the sequel trilogy. So at some point, I mean, there's gonna have to be some sort of answer, probably, of
her
fate.
Sure. Yep. The only other kind of, like, major, I guess, two other things I had on this episode are that I feel like a lot of the, it was just interesting to watch it now, because a lot of the visual language of Mortis I see reflected in other things that have come after. And I wonder how much this is a reference point that the creators of, like, say, Rebels, and which is, you know, Dave, obviously, but, like, Rebels and Ahsoka and stuff, go back to this and pull from it. And then also how much this pulled from other things. So, like, one example is that I thought the temple or whatever it is, the monastery, looked a lot like Vader's castle. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. But then I know, like, there were, like, Macquarie designs and stuff for Vader's castle. So it's like, was that influenced by designs for Vader's castle when they were making Vader's castle later on? Because that would have been after this for sure, like, in the Disney era. Was there some thought of, like, well, you know what I mean, to go back to this and pull, you know what I'm saying, that kind of stuff? So just little moments like that. But there's a lot of design language and art design that kind of I see similarities in a lot of what's come after, but then also wonder where the inspiration for that stuff even came from initially for this episode. Like, where did they pull it from, you know? So, yeah. And then I guess the one other thing too that I had on this one is that the major kind of question being asked throughout the episode, and I think, you know, a big, obviously important topic, is Anakin the chosen one? You know, that's like a thread running through here, and sort of a Anakin's, you know, says that the prophecy is not true, it's not real or whatever, and you know, the father's like, oh, you're definitely the chosen one. And anyway, it's just a big question kind of hanging over the episode, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah And as to like what that actually means in the context of like Mortis, is the father is like, you are the chosen one, or if you are the chosen one, you have to remain here to keep my children in balance, because like I'm dying, whatever. And then he's like, leave and your choice will haunt you in the galaxy. So it is like this, which is kind of like one of like the things that just doesn't land for me about this whole arc, is this, you know, idea of what is happening on this planet that we're just, you know, just being introduced to in this like three-part, you know, cartoon, is like this planet represents everything that's happening to the galaxy. Like, and in, I think it's maybe the next episode, they talk about like, well, the sun is getting stronger and he's, you know, in the dark side. So that means the Sith are getting stronger in the whole galaxy. And like, you know, everything that's happening here is representative of everything that's happening everywhere in the galaxy with the Force, which, I don't know, maybe... That's just like, I don't know if it's too high concept for me, or if it's just a concept I don't think like works.
But yeah.
Yeah, that stuff, yeah, just like really doesn't land for me. It's like hard to actually feel or accept the stakes that are being presented here.
I agree, and I also feel like the resolution of those stakes by the end of this arc undermines them being all that important in the first place, which is a major mm-hmm. issue I have with all of
yep.
it. But we can talk about that when we get to
we'll
it.
We'll get
yeah.
there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the next episode, which is Altar of Mortis, or the Japanese title is Light and Dark. Light and Dark, yeah. So the description of this episode reads, before the Jedi can leave Mortis, the Sun takes Ahsoka captive in an attempt to entice Anakin into joining him to use their combined strength to overpower his father and sister. To this end, the Sun casts Ahsoka under the spell of the dark side. Meanwhile, the father attempts to stave off a disastrous showdown between his children and maintain the Force's increasingly precarious balance on the planet. Fearing that the son may be unstoppable, the daughter does the forbidden by taking Obi-Wan Kenobi to the Altar of Mortis, wherein is kept the Dagger of Mortis, a weapon capable of killing a Force wielder. The son steals this weapon and attempts to use it against his father to steal his power and end his rule, but the daughter sacrifices herself, placing herself in front of the blade. So I guess when it says capable of killing a Force wielder, it means killing one of these Mortis gods or whatever, right? Because mm-hmm. as far as I know, like lots of different blades can, or weapons or whatever, can, like Force wielders can die of natural causes, man. You know what I mean? They can die of getting cut with a lightsaber.
They could, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess that specifically means these three, the father, the son, and the daughter. So so yeah, that's the description. I think watching this as a cartoon on Cartoon Network as an episode of the third season of The Clone Wars, it's a pretty cool idea to see the Evil Dead, Deadite version of Ahsoka, you know, like mm-hmm. all consumed by the dark side. And I think that was pretty fun and pretty cool. to get the creepy possessed version of Ahsoka. You know, certainly there's some drama. It's compelling, you know, the brother turning on his own father, and attempting to kill him too. So, yeah, this is, this episode definitely has some cool moments and some cool concepts for sure.
Yeah. There's a few just kind of like fun inconsequential things that I like about this episode. First of all, always a fan of the Clone Wars announcer at the beginning of the episodes, the, you know, the old
Mystery on Mortis.
Yeah. Yep. Cause Mystery on Mortis,
not a good impersonation, great. But
yeah. I like those. When the daughter leads Obi-Wan, to that, the altar, it is like, it looks straight up like a World of Warcraft dungeon from like 2009, which is pretty great. Lots of just like weird glowy green stuff and happening around it. This isn't actually something I like, but it's ridiculous when the son is like actually says the words, "Everything has transpired exactly as I planned."
Oh, right. just
like,
yeah,
incredibly lame. Wait, is this the first episode where the brother turns into a giant bat?
I don't think so, but I do like that. I like that a lot. I think he did do it in the previous episode. He definitely does it in the third also, but yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Probably worth mentioning the brother can turn into a giant bat. He can just, you know, Dracula his way out of there. But then
a little bit of gothic horror and sort of Dracula infused Star Wars before we got the Tales of Vader's Castle comics years later.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But then the daughter turns into like a griffin. Like what,
yeah,
what is
like? Well, because bats are dark side and griffins are light side, Ryan. That's obvious.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, again, please do not explain to me the origins of these transformations. Like, I do not need to know about Witches of Dathomir or whatever, like, evoking whatever. Like, I don't need this, like, Harry Potter bullshit, like, in Star Wars any more than it already is. So,
You know, real quick on the concept on the topic of the daughter. I do want to say, you know, I appreciate most things about this arc and these episodes, even if they're not my favorite, but I do appreciate a lot of it. I don't at all enjoy the design of the daughter, like the character, the look of it. It's so, like, her hair is enormous. Like, no one's hair has that much volume. And just, like, the look of the dress she wears and everything, it's just... So, and she kind of glides around like a, I don't know, like what, but I just don't really like it very much. I don't think it's a very Star Wars feeling design for a character.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I know you loved it, but I'm just saying it's not my favorite design.
Neither is her turning into a griffin.
I'm more okay with that. I like that much more than the actual look of the character, I'll just say, but.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is, but it's worth mentioning because there is a part where they actually fight. Like it's a bat versus a griffin in battle. And yeah. Yep. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Let's see. Well, there's also the whole situation at the end where, like, the daughter has, you know, kind of, she's put her body between her brother's blade and the father and sacrificed herself. Mm-hmm. And she's laying there, and then there's like this whole thing where, like, Anakin just like walks in front of the father and kneels in front of him, and they both like kind of mirror each other's movements, and then Anakin, like, you know, puts a hand on each, like, on the daughter and the father, or the daughter and this and the brother. Anyway, he like acts as like a conduit, you know. Oh, it's no, Ahsoka, actually. That's what it is.
Yeah.
To Ahsoka to undo the possession or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But I was just like, wow, it's not a big deal. It's a cartoon, whatever. But I was just like, wow, that was really interesting how he like silently, without any verbal communication, just knew like, okay, I should assume the position on my knees here between these two, mm-hmm. and place my hands there and just do this thing, like, to transfer, you know, whatever it was. I thought that was, you know, a little bit, I didn't understand how he knew what he was doing there, but I guess he is the chosen one, so that's cool. But also, I did think too, like, I kind of liked it, the daughter, you know, making that sacrifice, and then right after that, like, him sort of using her energy and her dying moments to cure Ahsoka. It was, you know, I know I have a tendency to bring this up, but like, it really comes back to, like, or I guess flashes forward to Rise of Skywalker and the whole, like, yep. You know, yeah, like, self-sacrifice and giving up, giving of one's, like, force or life or energy or whatever in a selfless way to someone else. So I kind of like it the way it's done a little better in The Rise of Skywalker, but still, I think, like, you know, that's... It's very in line with, I think, the values and like the ideas of Star Wars. So as much as I thought it was a little goofy the way he went over there and kneeled and like immediately, like, and they both like kind of go like this, and their eyes roll back in their head and everything, like, you know what I mean? It was a little corny, but end of the day, Christian Taylor, who wrote these episodes, I'm like, okay, well, that does fit in with like George's vision of like the kind of morality of Star Wars and stuff.
Yeah, I don't like it in any case. I don't like the energy, the life transferring magic siphoning stuff in general. Like, I feel like you can have, like, Star Wars has been fine with having sacrifice without being like so literal about it.
Yeah,
like, but yeah, but I mean, you're right, like, it is, does, I guess, set the precedent for that in a sort of, this is like a different scenario than like the Ben Solo stuff. And
yeah, I just mean it more as like a motif or like an idea that's not like, oh, well, this proves that I don't mean so much like, well, see, if you don't like it in Rise of Skywalker, this proves that actually it is a power that Jedi can do. I just more mean like, like, it's an idea that's important in Star Wars, that it's like, it's good to give of oneself, to be selfless and to be willing to sacrifice for others. You know what I mean? That's like a motif that, like, certainly I think we see in less literal or obvious ways. Like you were saying about the Rise of Skywalker, it's very on the nose there. You see it throughout Star Wars all the time in more subtle ways, I guess.
Yep.
This is a pretty like intense version of it. In Rise of Skywalker, it's a pretty intense version of it. But, you know, I just, you know, kind of appreciated the similarity there, I guess. Yeah.
Like, regardless of execution thematically, it's on point.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So yeah, like, should we move on to the final episode here, Ghosts of Mortis?
Ghosts of Mortis.
All right. In Ghosts of Mortis, this one, directed by Stuart Lee again. I don't think I gave credit to the director, Brian Kalin O'Connell, of the last one, but this third episode, Ghosts of Mortis, which is called Future Choice in Japanese. Ghosts of Mortis, the Jedi remain stranded on Mortis, and the Sun, aligned with the dark side of the Force, renews his efforts to convert Anakin as the Jedi prepare for a decisive confrontation. Anakin is stunned by images of his dark future. The son promises him the power to avert his destiny. The father recognizes that the son has broken the rules of time. He wipes Anakin's memory of these future visions and steals the Mortis dagger to end the conflict. The father impales himself, thus preventing the son from stealing his power. The son, stunned by this, is run through by Anakin. With all three Force wielders destroyed, the imbalance in the Force disappears on Mortis. The three Jedi are transplanted back to the galaxy proper, apparently at the moment that they disappeared. All right. So, I think the big things in this episode are, you know, to start, for sure, it's the vision that the son shows to Anakin of his future. Right, they're in a lava area of Mortis. It's very
Mustafarian.
Yeah, very Mustafarian. Yeah, so that I think it was intentional and makes sense. And then the vision he sees is quite literal, and as I was watching it, I don't know if literal is the right word, but as I was watching it, it's very specific. As I was watching it today, because I watched it this morning, I was thinking like, all right, going into it, like, all right, well, you know. I was feeling like if this was me, I would make it a sort of vague suggestion of what his future might be like, you know? And I was thinking like, I hope they don't like have lines from, you know, Revenge of the Sith. Nope, they did it all. You know what I mean? You see Padme, you see Obi-Wan there. Mm-hmm. You see him getting ready to kill a youngling. Like, it's all there. Even so far
giant,
as like at the end
Vader
of it, there's
helmet.
A Vader helmet above him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I would preferred a little more subtlety or a little more restraint in that vision. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I will say too, like, let's be fair. This is 2011 and on a cartoon made for children. And, maybe it's good to kind of make evident to the audience what, you know, he stands to be corrupted to do, or whatever you want to say, like in the end. Right. So I can see it from that perspective, but it was maybe a tad much for me in terms of showing exactly what was going to happen. And it does make me think too, like, well, wait a minute. And I guess like, it's a pretty obvious answer, temporal, whatever, like the rules of time don't exist in Mortis. So, it's already happened, I guess, or whatever. So the son can show him that, but you know, something I'm wrestling with, at least initially while watching it, is like, well, this hasn't happened yet. So how can you have it? How can I see like what Anakin says in that moment or what Anakin does in that moment? Like, I saw it in Revenge of the Sith, but like that hasn't happened yet. So he shouldn't be able to show him that, you know, but that's just because I'm thinking of time too conservatively. The father agrees
he shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Apparently, that's a big no-no on Mortis. Like, one of the major rules is, like, no future stuff, okay? That's against the rules on Mortis.
Yeah, and I feel like this is the episode where, I mean, like, I don't want to be, like, plot hole, excuse me, YouTube dipshit. But, like, I mean, everything just kind of falls apart here. Because, it's not even, like, I'm so clever, I identified this thing. It's like, if you think about like literally anything that happens in this episode for more than 2 seconds, it's like either like, how would that work, or like, is this really the best way to tell this story? And I'm not even like, I don't even want to approach it as like the plot hole angle of just like, I just don't think this is good storytelling. Like, I don't like this storytelling, I guess, at this point, because I think all that stuff, like, regardless of like audience, plot, how you're communicating, whatever, like, it's just, it's corny, it's on the nose, it's also just like exhausting at this point, because through the prequels, through the Clone Wars, and all, you know, the additional material, you know, around it, the books, the comics, there has been so much foreshadowing of Anakin's future, like, an exhausting amount of it. Like, you know, you have your Phantom Menace poster of, you know, Jake Lloyd standing there in like the shadow of Darth Vader behind him. Great poster. And then that has been hammered in for 20 years since then of just like, like, hey, did you know that Anakin Skywalker is going to become Darth Vader? And it continues to be so. Like, we see all this exact same stuff in even, like, things as recent as Ahsoka, where it's like, oh, it's Anakin Skywalker. He's so good. Uh-oh. I think he has a bit of dark side in him. He's saying some stuff that's a little shady.
Yeah.
I hope nothing comes from that. But yeah, so I think like them just going so literal with all of that is just like, it's like eye rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And there was other issues with this one. Not to, you know, be too critical or whatever, but like the second episode ends with the father being like, you guys have to leave. Like you must leave, get on that ship and get off of Mortis before my son has access to that ship. Please leave. That is imperative. And then like 3 minutes into this episode, maybe not even, Anakin's like, Obi-Wan, I can't leave Mortis without getting the approval of the father to leave. And I'm like, what? He was just screaming at you to leave. He was telling you, like, you have to leave. So, I mean, I understand it because, like, Anakin's saying, like, well, you know, the father told me it's my job to be here because I'm the chosen one to hold Mortis in balance. And if I don't do that, people are going to suffer all over the place or whatever. But so I think it's just the dialogue maybe could have been written in a little bit different way because I think that's the idea. The idea is, I need to talk to him to see if it's really okay that I don't stay here as like the new Mortis god or whatever. But it just sounds like I got to go ask the dude if it's all right to leave. And I just got done watching him tell you, yes, you have to leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So and honestly, I think like that part is actually like a pretty good, more subtle, you know, Anakin character moment because it is like, you know, he has these moments where he's like, that's ridiculous. I don't believe in this thing. And then like, he gets so easily talked into things that, you know, like, cause when he started this, he's like, no, the prophecy's ridiculous. Like, I don't believe any of that. Like, I just want to get out of here. I need to go fight this war. Like, that's what I should be doing. And then like, he so quickly gets kind of manipulated into like suddenly this thing becomes his world. In the same way like Palpatine, you know, manipulates him. So I think like that is kind of like a pretty good Anakin, you know, story moment. And like it is subtle. Like it's not explicitly addressed. It's not like Obi-Wan doesn't say like, oh, that's Anakin. Hopefully, you know, he don't, no one else ever manipulates him like that again.
Yeah, you're right. No, that's a good point. I like that. I don't know if I'd really thought about that. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, so, they have this whole interaction, Anakin and the son, he sees this vision of his future. And then he basically is like, okay, cool. I guess I gotta join the dark side to not join the dark side, basically, or something, right?
Yeah.
But like you said, he is easily manipulatable and, or I don't know if that's even fair, but like, we know that in the future he will be, you know, consumed by a lie like that and end up, you know, and believing the Jedi are traitors. That's like something he tells Obi-Wan, like before when he throws that, speeder into the lava. He's like, you know, I know that it's going to be the Jedi that will betray the Republic, and his eyes are all evil looking and everything, which really fast side note, in the Star Wars Archives book I was reading a couple weeks ago, the prequels one, maybe I sent this to you guys, I don't remember, but Hayden Christensen wanted to have the evil yellow contact lenses when he becomes like Darth Vader. Like I think he gets them, when does he get them? Like after he goes and kills the younglings, or maybe right before he goes and kills the younglings,
when
or
he storms the temple.
The temple, okay.
When he's
and George there. Yeah, George at first was like, nah, that's too, you know, like, we're not doing that or whatever. And then, like, he ended up a couple days later being like, oh, you know what? I like it. Okay, we're going to do it. So that was a Hayden Christensen idea. I think maybe George planned on doing it, like, right at the end or something. But Hayden was like, nah, I think it should be early or whatever.
Because
so
he turns, like,
yeah,
when he has the idea to, like, when he makes the plan to storm the temple, it's not after he does it that he
turns. It's not before. Yeah, he's already Darth Vader at that point, right?
Yeah. So
I think the second he, I mean, he kneels down in front of, he kills Mace Windu and kneels down in front of Palpatine, like, that's it, right? So
yeah, that's the moment. Yeah. So I think from there on, I agree with Hayden. Good call.
Yeah. So yeah, but anyway, he goes and tries to get back to the speeder so that the son can, you know, they can leave together. Ahsoka disables it, and then there's this big, you know, confrontation, right, where they go to, Obi-Wan goes to the, is it the temple? Whatever it's called, where they're not supposed to go, but Obi-Wan's like, well, you know, we're doing it anyway. So they go there, and the kind of climax of the episode takes place. They're all together at this location. I think it's a well. That's what it's called. It's a well, some kind of well. So that's where the climax of the episode takes place. And, basically everybody, the father decides in that moment that he's going to use the dagger. The son retrieves the dagger from the daughter's grave. The father, you know, gets the dagger from him and decides he's going to use it to kill himself, because that will take all the power away from the son. And then actually kind of gives Anakin the look over his shoulder, like, go ahead and stab this dude with a lightsaber too. So, you know, the father dies, the son dies, the daughter's already dead. And so as a result of all of these Mortis gods, dying, that brings balance back to Mortis. Mm-hmm. I have issues with that a little bit. What do you think, Ryan?
Yes. Before we get to that, there's also, I mean, we kind of briefly mentioned it, but I think it's, like, really worth noticing and sitting with for a moment. The son shows Anakin all these visions, and then the father is like, yeah, you weren't supposed to see that, so I'm going to, you know, use the little Men in Black pen thing and make you forget that you ever saw that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Is there a precedent for memory wipes in Star Wars at this point?
Not that I, well, for droids, you know, for droids, of course,
for droids,
but no, I don't remember. I could be wrong, but I don't remember anything like that.
Okay, because obviously we get it in modern Star Wars, like, it happens.
Yeah.
But, wow, who's this guy?
I was just going to say, like, things that people shouldn't see or be seen or whatever. This is, I think, Darth Bane. This is the Darth Bane. Apparently, Darth Revan and Darth Bane were both going to be in this episode until late in the production. And so this is apparently the concept art for Darth Bane. Yeah. So.
Okay, that is not Darth Bane. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What is happening there? Okay, you got to put that
little bonus for the little bonus for the viewers at home. Oh, do you want to see Darth Revan?
Yeah.
Let's see Darth Revan. Okay, hold on. Sorry, I kind of cut you off. But yeah, you're right. That's like a major thing. Like, you shouldn't have seen all that. I do think that's important. Obviously, that's important, right? Like,
yeah, you can't have
plot-wise,
Anakin,
like,
going around.
That would be really awful if... Yeah, there you go.
Okay, that
But he already
like
existed in a video game, so... They already exist in a video game. Yeah, so that's... Yeah. But no, I mean, Anakin... Like, it would be terrible for Anakin to have known all this stuff at this point in in the Clone Wars, like before Revenge of the Sith. That would be truly awful. So they had to come up with something like that if they were going to show him this vision of his future. Yeah.
So that just, like, kind of goes back to the, like, why show him this vision of the future that's, like, not very well done, and then you have to have this, like, you write yourself into this, like, ridiculous plot contrivance as a result.
Yeah, but again, though, like, I think that, man, I'll just make it really fast because I don't have a lot of time left here, but I think there's something to be said for viewing the storytelling in each medium as appropriate or unique to that medium and worrying less about the impact on the larger story. So if I'm making a show for kids and I want them to understand what I want them to understand in that episode, being like, what would be the best way to do this in the context of this show, The Clone Wars, and like showing kids exactly what his future would be, maybe that's the best way to do it for this story. The problem is, like, when everything has to impact everything else and, you know, we view it as part of a larger thing, then it's like, well, maybe that's not the right way to do it. I agree. My preference 100% is like that vision should have been less specific and it didn't have to show him all those details. And then it would be okay. It would sit well within the rest of the story. But I think, you know, it really is a question of like purpose and audience and intention. Like, am I thinking about, if I'm the writer, am I thinking about, you know, when Disney buys Lucasfilm and everything becomes canon with a capital C, like how does this impact everything? Or am I just thinking about what's going to be like that Saturday morning or that Friday night when kids are watching this episode? Like, what's the best way to deliver the story to that specific audience, you know? So that's the kind of conundrum we found ourselves in with Star Wars these days, I guess. And it is what it is, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's talk, because I am getting a little low on time here and I want to talk about the Ahsoka show stuff too. So just quickly, where are you at with the whole, like, everybody dies and that brings balance to Mortis thing? That's a problem.
Yeah, I don't love it. I mean, it's kind of like, it's interesting in like a really like dark, like a black comedy sort of way. Like, I think, like, it is like pretty like dark and ironic, and it feels like a story you would get in one of those like Halloween special Tales from Vader Castle stories. But like, as you know, as it's kind of presented here, like, I don't think it's great.
I promise I'm not trying to be like a total jerk here or whatever, but like, truly, this is what it feels like to me. It feels like if you were watching the Terminator movies and the Terminator movies kept telling you over and over that like it's of the utmost importance that John Connor like survive because like he has to lead the resistance or whatever in the future. But then instead, like John Connor and like Sarah Connor and also like the T-800, they all die. And then the argument the movie makes is like, okay, cool, everything's fine now because all these key players died or whatever. It's like, yeah, but I just watched three episodes these episodes were telling us that the only way to keep the Force in balance is for these three gods of Mortis to be there to keep it in balance. And then at the end, you're like, it's telling us, well, if they weren't there at all, it would be fine. Like, well, why, you know what I mean? Like this, I thought they had this critical, important role. And that's even more problematic to me because I think in the future, the idea is going to be that Ahsoka or Baylan or somebody, or maybe a combination of people, are going to be back on Mortis fulfilling these important roles. But this arc ends with basically saying, that doesn't matter. Like, you could, if they die, everything's cool. Am I missing? Am I wrong about that? Or like, is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. No, I think you're justified in your belief. And I think, like, I don't, like, inherently have a problem with the story if it was, like, if this was all presented in a different way. If this was, like, presented as, like, here's a spooky cautionary tale, like,
yeah,
kind of thing. And then, like, you know, then there's like this kind of twist at the end where, you know, everyone dies, you know, it's you know, like John Carpenter's The Thing, like, you know, well, we took care of the problem because
yeah,
everyone's dead. Like, Yeah, I think like it could work in that sense, but that's not the way it's presented here. So it's almost like it's the same feeling as like the mind wipe, basically.
Yeah,
where it's you know, like, why even bother like telling the story if you're just gonna like actually like here's this like, you know, Deus Ex Machina like plot point that like just negates all the storytelling up to that point and has like no real impact. Like the moment isn't that impactful to me, whereas like when this happens in like a horror movie or something, because it, you know, happens constantly where there's like this ironic like black comedy, you know, dark ending, whatever, and you're like left there like damn, like kind of thing. Like that's not how I felt at the end of this. I was like, I mean, I guess it's like, because you're like supposed to be kind of like sad that everyone died, and then like, but you're also kind of wondering like what the hell's going on. Yeah, I don't know. I think like,
well, and the sun is like the personification of the dark side, but then he's really not that evil, like it doesn't feel like. But you know, I mean, I get that like with a normal person who is light and dark and all that, but you know, I always struggle with this. I think my perspectives are too Western, you know, and like I struggle with like balance as a concept, and you know, like I don't know, I feel like I'm pretty bad at like, you know, all that. But you know, because the father says, I think it's the father who's like, you know, that without, and maybe it's the son, but anyways, it's, you know, it's reiterated multiple times in this arc that, you know, you can't have balance and you can't have the force and you can't have life without light and dark. Like they both have to be there, you know, which makes sense. But then it's like, okay, well, the daughter is light and she's always light, you know what I mean? But then the son is the dark side. But then like he's, you know, in the end, he's like sad about what happens to his dad, and we do feel empathetic for him. And I understand that from a characterization perspective, but then like, but isn't the story telling us that he is like dark side personified? Because he doesn't really seem to be dark side personified. I guess it's just the role he has. Like the role is to represent the dark side, but like doesn't mean he doesn't have anything else going on within him. And in general, I guess a more complex character is better, but still, it's just a little...
I don't think so in this case.
Like, yeah, you think he should just be like straight up like...
Like it was also like kind of silly to me when he was like, when he goes to his sister's grave and is like, oh, I'm so sad about this. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, like, it's just like, maybe, you know, like, whatever, like he had a single-minded focus and that led him to the dark side, which, you know, happens to multiple characters in Star Wars, like, fine. But I think the big problem with this, like, you have these characters that are supposed to be like a metaphor, but then you're also like characterizing them,
yeah,
and like trying to like make them more complex while also like trying to explain the metaphor in like really logical ways. And that's where like all of this storytelling just kind of like crumbles for me in this. It's like are they a metaphor or are they like these literal like godlike beings that, you know, have this like specific purpose? And like, okay, are they these godlike beings or are they like characters we're supposed to empathize with?
Right.
Like you can't have it like all ways.
Yeah. And on that exact, and I'm running out of time, unfortunately, but on that exact point, you can't have it both ways. And I feel that is exactly the case. Like this could be just a mystical kind of fun allegorical three arc story that at the end they wake up in the ship and it's like, ah, well, you know, probably it's some weird force vision, but really none of it was really real and whatever else. But then you can't have it both ways, as you said, and then spend the next 14 years or 13 years or whatever, like threading all of this into really critical components of future Star Wars storytelling, which brings me to Ahsoka, which I do want to talk about for a minute here before we wrap up. Ahsoka concludes with Baylan, you know, looking out at those statues on Peridia of the father and the son, and the daughter is next to him, but her head is missing, which I feel like is not just a, I don't think it's just a coincidental, like, we should make these things look like, you know, worn a little bit, so let's just lop the daughter's head off. I don't know how you read that, but I read that like Ahsoka's gonna take that place, you know what I mean? That's my interpretation of that symbolism there. I don't know, but in any case, it just, Ahsoka the show ends with both setting up the idea that Mortis will be important to that that show's next season, or the story that show overall is going to tell, and also I think really further solidifying in a major way the importance of Mortis to the larger Star Wars story.
Yeah, I think I don't know, like I'm like a pretty big fan of the Ahsoka show. And I kind of, like, I knew this was in there, and I kind of just hand-waved it at the end, because, like, that's not what that show was about to me. It was not about, like, Mortis stuff and the origins of the Force and all of that. Like, I think that's, like, kind of interesting for, like, Baylan's story, because he was kind of this ambiguous character, like, does he actually care about, like, the Empire? Does he care about the Jedi Order? Does he care about the Sith? Or is he just trying to, like, figure things out, and he has, like, this different belief structure that, like, you know, he thinks this Mortis stuff is important. He's a Mortis stan. And, I like that about his character. I like that his character was complex, but, like, I don't, like, actually really care about this part. And it's really sad too, because most likely he's not going to be in the next season. Like, I mean,
I think they're going to recast him. That would be my guess. I think they'll recast
him.
I mean, I don't know anything, you know, obviously I don't know anything, but I'm not even basing that on like any rumors or anything. It just, to me, it seems like such an important character that they would maybe have to recast him. But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I was thinking maybe they would like put him in like a cloak or like a mask or something.
Yeah.
Represent him. Like, I mean, you know how I feel about this. Please do not like deep fake him.
No, I think that would be awful. That would be terrible.
Yeah. Please don't.
It's one thing with an actor who's living and still with us, or, you know, I don't know, it, whatever. But yeah, that would be very bad, I think. Yeah, tasteless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so I don't know where it's going to go. I would say, like, that stuff is, again, it's not the, it wasn't, like, the best part of Ahsoka for me. It wasn't even really anything, like, I've thought about. Like, I was like, oh, haha, it's that.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they're going to take this story. But again, like, it just kind of exists in Filoni's work as of right now, so
yeah,
it is just kind of like a, you know, oh, it's Dave with his owls and wolves and mortises,
like, yeah,
classic Dave, like, it's fine, whatever.
All right, I'm gonna say my final piece here, two things real quick. One, I think that Ahsoka, I will say, I think it's really, they handled the mystical side of things in a more subtle way, and a more ambiguous way, and a more interesting way to me. Like, she's, you know, she falls at the end of whatever episode that is, and then you see her face close up, and then it kind of like pans to the left, and there's like waves, and then all of a sudden she's like in the world between worlds, and just like, where is she? How is she? How did that happen? Like, did she fall for an instant? And like, did all that happen in an instant? Did it happen over a long period of time? Like, all that stuff. It was just more, I think, visually, the way they transitioned and set up the questions and all of that was like definitely leveled up from what we got here in this Mortis arc. So I think that's good. I think it makes a ton of sense, because Dave's been doing this a long time and has really kind of upped his game in a lot of ways, I feel like. So that's cool. And I think worth pointing out and appreciating.
Yeah.
And just the other thing I'll say, like, my final piece on the Mortis arc or whatever, yeah, you know what? Coming back to it after 13, 14 years, I certainly had complaints and pointed out complaints or whatever. As a self-contained little three-arc story, I think it's pretty compelling, pretty interesting, especially viewed through the context of being a cartoon and a children's show that aired on Cartoon Network and all that stuff. I think it's interesting. I think the way it tries to address some of the mythology of Star Wars and the Force and everything is pretty interesting. So it's cool. I think I just have some concerns, I guess, with the exponential kind of increased importance of all of it. And, you know, this being the genesis of everything with Mortis and all that stuff, like there's some like real kind of like fundamental concerns or issues I have with the way this whole thing is created and set up and stuff in this three episode arc. So, so yeah, I guess I feel like I would want it to be a little, I would want the origin of all this stuff to be a little more, airtight, considering how important it has become going forward. But like I just said, I do feel like they're doing a better job with this kind of mystical stuff lately, like for per se in Ahsoka. So, you know, maybe it doesn't really matter all that much anyways, I guess, you know, how it started in the Clone Wars.
Yeah. I think like my final piece is, again, like these episodes are watchable. They're not like, they're not hard or painful to watch. They kind of fly by. There's some silly visuals and ridiculousness that, you know, you can take or leave. I'm a fan of like when Star Wars gets very weird, very big ideas. I like that about Star Wars. I just think in so many ways this was just a big miss execution wise.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up the show there because I'm running out of time. It's Oscar Sunday. I got to get in as many Oscar movies as I can before the big ceremony tonight. So I'm off to the movie theater. Yeah, that's on tonight. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. No Star Wars nominated, though. So, you know, it is what it is. But I'm sure ILM.
Things?
Is that? I have not seen it.
Is that?
It is nominated.
Nominated for Oscars? Okay.
Yes, it is.
Really good.
I haven't seen that yet. I wish that I could, but I don't think. I mean, I will, but not today.
I still think about it a lot. It's seared into my brain.
Oh, okay, interesting. I watched Anatomy of a Fall last night. The night before, we watched Perfect Days, which was really great. In Japan, Ryan.
Lindsay just watched that. I did not.
Yeah, really good. That was really good. The Past Lives we watched a few weeks ago. That was really good. So, yeah, a lot of really interesting Oscar movies
this
year. Is
our boy Adam Driver nominated for anything for Ferrari?
No, I don't believe so. No.
Well,
he could be. I don't know. I'd have to look. But Ferrari is not nominated as a movie for anything. So I don't think so. Yeah.
I'm pro his Italian accent in that movie. I know it's potentially problematic, but
yeah.
I liked it. I loved his performance in that.
Yeah, and the second Italian heavyweight sort of like cultural figure that he's played in a biopic in the last 3 years or something, because wasn't he also in the House of Versace?
Oh,
wasn't that
yeah.
what it was called? Yeah. So he's found a niche. But I gotta go. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast. Until then, you can find everything we do at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. If you want to tell us what we're missing regarding the Mortis arc or why we're being a little too harsh on it or whatever, please feel free to email the show, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com. Join our Discord, which I'll put a link for in the show notes, or follow us on Blue Sky. So, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.